This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Inquiries of Our Reality with Shane Jones.
Reality isn't what it seems. I'm Dr. D's taking aboard a craft with a tractor beam. Is life a simulation or an astral dream? Aliens travel through black holes in different galaxies. Life is a bizarre odyssey. With the mic talking about philosophy. Well, Bigfoot is stalking campers as the Wendigo walks through the woods of sharpened antlers, using a Ouija board to talk to the dead like a necromancer. There's so many questions and not enough answers. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of Deep Open-Minded Conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, and today for you guys, I'd like to spotlight another fantastic artist in the cryptid community. And of course, we're going to talk about his art, we're going to talk about some awesome folklore, and on top of that, we are also going to dive into his own weird, possibly glitchy, personal, bizarre encounter. But before we get into today's fantastic episode, we of course have to do news and updates and front of house. Not too much as far as news and updates goes. Just one thing that I would like to start doing more with the show is that I would like to get more of you listeners to be able to come onto the show, share your experiences, and make it so that it's a more involved show with all you guys, and make it so it's not just all the researchers and everything, but again, a lot of people sharing their own personal experiences. And that being said, this podcast has a strong focus on community engagement, so I encourage all listeners to share their own experiences and research on the show. That being said, if you are somebody who has had an experience and you guys would like to share it with me or share it on the show or just have it read or typed out for on the show, you guys can email me at omencounterreports@outlook.com. And if you're interested in being a guest on the show and you're a researcher, author, open-minded individual of any sort, you guys can email me at inquiriesofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com. And if you guys want to support the show, a couple different ways to do so. Number one that I'd like to keep pushing so that I can get more of you guys involved in the community is that I would like to get some more ratings and reviews for the show if you guys think that I've deserved or earned it. That being said, the show is grassroots and it's only going to grow with your guys' help. And with your guys' help growing it, I'm able to grow out the community, make it so there's more people coming on the show and sharing their experiences and everything, and make it so that we can form an even bigger community of open-minded individuals. But again, the only way that's going to happen is if you guys help me push the show and make it so that more people are able to see it. So if you guys could leave those reviews or ratings for the show on iTunes or Spotify, I would definitely appreciate it. And if you guys leave a 5-star review, of course, I will read it on the show and give you guys a big shout out. Number two is to go and check out the Patreon. Got a lot of new stuff that's going to be coming up over there in the next month or so. I have a bunch of stuff for a new show that's going to be a Patreon exclusive with just me. It's all in the works, and I should be recording and posting that episode within the next couple weeks, just working out some kinks as far as like a theme and everything for it. But a lot of cool stuff going on over there, so if you guys want to check that out, there's a $1 tier, a $3 tier, and a $5 tier. All of them have a 7-day free trial, of course, so you guys can check them out, see which one suits you the best. And if you guys have any input as far as stuff that you guys would like to see for the Patreon, I'm all ears and would absolutely love to hear it. And the other way you guys can support the show is through the Open Minds Media merch store. I recently uploaded a bunch of new designs in there. I cleaned up the merch store, and I do have some new designs that I am working on that will be up over there soon. A lot of gung-ho stuff going on over there, but if you guys are interested in checking out some of the designs that I've worked on, not just pertaining to podcasts, but also a lot of just cryptid-related designs and stuff, you guys can go, of course, and go and check out the Open Minds Media merch store. And if you guys want to pick up something for yourself, you guys can use code CRYPTID10 to receive 10% off at checkout. And to stay up to date on the show, you guys can always go and follow Inquiries of Our Reality and Open Minds Media on Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. And while you're at it, don't forget to also go and follow my other show, Bizarre Encounters, if you guys would like more shows that dive into a lot of the same topics that we talk about on this show, just in a different format, being that it's Oren and my research and stuff. We do have some guests on, of course, but it's all our research diving into the weird, the bizarre, and anything interesting, of course. And every single thing that I mentioned is all available on the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome to the show, artist and illustrator, Easton Hawk. How's it going today, man?
Hello, I'm fine. How are you?
Absolute pleasure to have you on the show, man. We've been chasing each other for, 2 years now?
Pretty much. And, you know, you're not the only person that I've had to reschedule 1,000 times with. So I just recently sat down with Brandon Wright with Tinfoil Tales last week, 2 weeks ago. And we were also going back and forth for like 8 months of, let's do it this way. And then shit, my wife got a, you know, my wife's a funeral director, so I'm doing a lot of the main parenting. So, you know, hey, let's do it this day. Oh, my wife got a call. I'm, you know, wrestling kids and doing bedtime 4 times because I have a 3-year-old that just won't go down. So
I got one of those too, so I feel you there.
The only one that I've had to do this too, so I'm sorry about that.
No, dude, it's all good. It's something, honestly, it happens all the time in the community. It's like people just hearing the shows, they don't necessarily realize that most of the people that are on these shows were just normal people. We're not anything special. Yeah. So yeah, it's like when we have to reschedule, we have to hop dates and all that. It's not even like, yeah, oh, I'm busy, I can't, don't have time for you. It's more like, oh, I'm dealing with life in general, like everybody else. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I ain't even mad, man. Right, it's just part of it. It's like working a full-time job on the side, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm glad. I was like, this guy definitely understands. I saw you and your wife, you know, wrestling the kids at Monster Fest. So I'm not doing that. I'm not bringing kids to these events. So you're a trooper.
Dude, I got no other choice. That's kind of what it comes down to. It's like my daughter loves going to those things. She's super duper social. My girlfriend, she's fine. She likes going to all of them. It's just my two about to be 3-year-old son. He's at that age where it's like difficult to just get him to sit. But as soon as he's a couple years older, I'm sure they'll all have fun going. But he's at that hard age where it's like either I don't go or I got to try to chase around a 2-year-old while I'm vending a table. So
it is a cool place to be. So there's plenty to distract usually and kind of, you know, bide your time. You know, there's plenty of vendors that are selling like stuffed animals and stuff like that. So the couple of times that I've had to drag one of my kids to an event, it's pretty easy to, oh, look at this. Oh, that's pretty cool. And then, you know, stops the whining and the belly aching.
See, I'm always the vendor that always ends up coming with the kids. So it's like everybody kind of, I feel like, knows me as having the kids. So just obviously, you know, hanging out and talking to everybody in the community, I feel like everybody expects it. So it's kind of nice now too, because it's like we got friends in the community. So it's like the kids want to walk around. It's like I know 90% of the people vending now. So it's like they're safe to just walk around. Like I'm not worried about them, you know, like I'm watching them from a distance. Like everybody's just kind of a community with them. They know who they are. So that makes it a million times easier. If it was just like a foreign event, it'd be one thing. But if you know everybody, then it's a million times easier.
Yeah, it's like Thanksgiving.
Literally. Then they walk around and have fun too, because they get to talk to everybody they know.
Right.
But kind of moving into stuff, man. Of course, the reason that we've gotten to meet at events is because of you doing your art. And for anybody that may not be familiar with who you are, what you do, what exactly your art style is and who you do art for, I guess, why don't you let them know a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your studio, company, whatever you want to call it, and a little bit about what got you into it.
Yeah, so my name's Easton Hawk. I just go by like Easton Hawk Illustration. I don't have a cool, you know, name to really.
Easton Seahawk. It sounds like I assume it almost sounds like a football reference.
Yeah, right. So I don't have like a brand. It's just me. But I do these cryptid folkloric stories and characters with a sci-fi, like classic sci-fi style to them. That's like two of my biggest loves has been the paranormal and classic cinema. So it just kind of felt natural to blend, you know, the heyday of ufology and all these weird stories is like the 60s, 70s. So it just kind of made sense that at the same time, all these powerhouse, like really iconic films and movie posters were coming out pretty regularly. So that was kind of my intention going into this series of cryptid art.
I got one on my wall here, actually. It says The Mothman of West Virginia, and it's the one where the Mothman has like the rays coming down with the woman standing there. That one's one of my favorites because it looks like one of the old like 1950s like novels about sci-fi. Kind of has like that feel to it, you know?
Yeah, I kind of wanted it to be kind of hokey, but I also, like I said, I don't know.
Hokey but serious, because your art style is very like detailed. It's not cartoony.
Yeah, I'm definitely I'm a big like line work hound, and I like bright vivid colors, and so I don't know. There's just something, like I said, it just kind of contextualizing everything to 50s and 60s and 70s was just like such a bombshell of weird stuff, and then weird cinema and great, you know, illustration work. So it just kind of, just being able to blend all of those like pretty easily and people respond to it accordingly is great.
You have one of those art styles too, that people can see it and it stands out, which I feel like is definitely a thing that you have to have in the cryptid community, because everybody can draw Sasquatch, but everybody has to have their own particular art style that makes them stand out. And I've had a few different artists on the show, and it's like, all of you guys draw a lot of the same stuff, but the art style is so vastly different that it's like you can look at 10 different Mothman pictures from 10 of the different cryptid community artists, and it just looks completely different, totally different feel to it. It's like all of you guys are fantastic with your very individualized art styles.
Yeah, and I think that's another, you know, part of my, one of my favorite things of being in this like niche community is it's folklore. There's no copyright. Nobody owns these stories. Nobody owns like these characters. So you can take liberties if, you know, with these things, when nobody has a photo, there's no reference photos out there of these creatures.
You know? If there are, they're a little bit blurry, so you can still kind of...
I mean, we have, you know, the Patterson-Gimlin film, and we have, you know, the Fresno Nightcrawler CCTV stuff, like that kind of stuff. But all of these, you're going off witness recounts and I don't know. There's just there's a lot of room for you to put in your own like flavor to a lot of the stuff. I think of my Flatwoods Monster, especially. That was one where, you know, there's four different accounts of what this thing looked like, and some of them match up, and then other parts of it don't really match up. So I could kind of pick and choose what elements that I really liked, and kind of just like Frankenstein monster it together.
You did yours like without the helmet, right? It has more like the fleshy skin tone to it. If I'm trying, I know I have the picture somewhere, but
yeah, I did both. So it's got the helmet and everything, but it's got like fleshy, gnarly hands under the cloak reaching up. So it's kind of I like the idea of it being an organic thing under a you know, in like a mech suit, essentially.
I almost feel like we did an episode on that one for Bizarre Encounters, and I almost feel like it makes a little bit more sense that way, because I don't know. I would assume if there is extraterrestrials coming here, especially if that was like the beginning of when the extraterrestrial phenomenon was happening. Well, 50s, kind of going into 70s, still kind of early in the phenomenon. I feel like if they were coming here around that time, and they were like, you know, they came here in the ancient times and now they're coming here around this time, assumably like any intelligent species is going to wear some type of like a spacesuit when they first step foot on a planet, even if they've been there before. If they've been there in a long time, you don't know if the atmosphere has changed. So at least for like those sightings, I feel like the totally robotic look definitely kind of has like that sci-fi 50s feel to it. Maybe people are kind of just imagining things or putting stuff together in their head. But for the most part,
I think it's just part of the zeitgeist, especially at that time, you know, with sci-fi on the rise. It's just, you know, if weird phenomena is kind of a co-creation with the experiencer, it just kind of makes sense that there's that, you know, metallic industrial like element to them, especially around that time when, you know, you have invaders from Mars and Planet Nine and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, that's around the same time the Pascagoula abduction happened too, and that had the metal suits too. So there's a lot of metal suit type abductions around that time.
It's an archetype at that point, so I don't know, it just makes sense.
And kind of weird, actually, it's been a while since we've heard some of that stuff, but bringing something back a little bit, and it may be more of like a human phenomenon, the whole thing with the Peruvian face peelers. I mean, they're talking about how those things were in more of like a metal suit. Right. And I don't know if you listen to Blurry Creatures, but Tim Alberino, he went out there and was actually talking to all of them. And he talked to the little girl that was originally the one that got grabbed that had like her throat kind of slit by him. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that one of them sounded like they were speaking Spanish and the other one sounded like it was speaking like really broken Spanish. Like it was somebody that spoke a different language and was trying to speak it. So when you get into that kind of weird stuff, it almost kind of makes you wonder if it's more of like a human phenomenon type thing. But either way, like there's still somewhat of like an archetype to that. Either one, it's like some type of government suit, or two, it's some type of extraterrestrial bio suit, you know?
Right. And that also kind of goes into one of my favorite parts of ufology is, you know, like Men in Black encounters and the idea of things trying to like appear human or trying to, you know, translate what they think human, you know, like pop culture is, especially because there's been a few, Phantoms and Monsters. I constantly scour just to find like the weirdest unusual stories. And there was one recently that he posted from like the 70s of a guy who encountered this like being that had a hula hoop around it and just kept saying, "I'm Jimmy Hoffa, I'm Jimmy Hoffa, I'm Jimmy Hoffa," over and over and over again, which is just, I don't know, it's just a funny little like red herring.
People like Jimmy Hoffa, right? Everybody's been talking about him. That's probably what they pulled from the culture, was that it was like a likable character, not realizing that everybody was looking for this missing guy. Yeah. Like
as buried under a stadium or, you know, under a highway. But yeah, just like, I love those kind of red herrings things. Or during the Mothman flap and everything, you have the Men in Black talking about Marilyn Monroe and Robert Kennedy and, you know, just like gossipy shit going on.
I mean, even around then too, the whole Ingrid Cold thing, that's something that Orin and I have talked about a bunch of times, that whole creepy smile that seems to be like this condensation that's with a lot of the creepy stuff. I feel like it's a matter of, they're not intentionally trying to be creepy, but you can tell it's like a forced expression. So it ends up being creepy, even though it's supposed to be something happy. And it's like, it gives you that uncanny value feeling. I think that's more so what it is than anything, is that it's like, you know, it's an empty smile, even though it's a huge smile. So it just freaks you out a lot more.
He's also projecting his thoughts and speech into my head with the smile. So he didn't really take into account, maybe that would throw Woody Durenberger off.
You got to at least pretend to move your lips a little bit, just to make it look like you're talking. Like,
yeah, give me a No, I have to. Yeah.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles, including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
And we are back, so let's hop right in.
But yeah, kind of bouncing a little bit back into your art, and then I definitely kind of want to side venture into some of this
one of many tangents, I'm
off the wall stuff, because I love getting into like the side tangents and stuff. As far as like your art in the first place, what got you interested in doing like cryptids as a whole? Like what started like your fascination with cryptids?
So cryptids have always, or I guess cryptids came later when I was a kid. I was mostly just into anything weird or unexplainable, and then it morphed into Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster and Mothman. Originally all of my art was just redrawing, you know, Darth Vader, and I was really into pirates for a while, so just drawing like pirate scenes and pirate maps and weird stuff like that. And then
it feels like for boys it's either knights or pirates. You're either going on one path or the other at some point.
Exactly. So yeah, you're either into like Tonka trucks and dinosaurs or, you know, but yeah, so cryptids came later down the line. I was just into monsters and I don't know, darker art from the jump. I feel like, Goosebumps was like my biggest like draw. Like, Tim Jacobus's art is kind of what pulled me into this like darker style, I guess, as a kid.
Were you a kid like back in the 90s too, when like The Crow and all those type movies were coming out? Because I feel like I have a lot of inspiration from that type of stuff, just because that era was just known for these weird like dark gothy movies that they did this really cool like ambiance with, but kind of inspired that like dark arty like goth style, I feel, for a lot of people in our generation that are into this kind of stuff.
I was born in 95.
Oh, it's 94, so we're...
So I think my biggest, along with Goosebumps, you know, at the book fair and everything, I think my biggest influence stylistically and just like, you know, seeing stuff that I really like and I want to do was being part of like the last generation of going to the video store and, you know, scanning, you know, the horror movies that I wasn't allowed to rent yet. But especially the cover for The Thing has been like my favorite piece of art ever. Has been for years. And then, you know, and then also learning that the same guy that did The Thing artwork also did all the Harry Potter stuff, all of the Star Wars stuff, all of, you know, he did The Walking Dead, he did Hellboy, he did like Pan's Labyrinth, he did like a ton. He was like the movie poster guy. So that Thing poster at my local Family Video is kind of like what opened my mind up to, oh, people make a career out of this. This guy is like all of my favorite movies. He did The Goonies, he did E.T.
No, I did not realize the same guy did all of those, but now going back over the cover art in my head, I'm like, holy crap, that was the same guy.
Yeah, Bruce Prison. He did everything. He's like the movie poster guy for decades. But to get to your question, there's another tangent already happening. Cryptids came when I found a book in my grandma's basement called Strange Stories and Amazing Facts, which was like a Reader's Digest book from like the 80s. And it's just a collection of like Fortean stuff without the word Fortean attached to it. It's, you know, raining frogs and like laughing hysteria and, you know, ghost ships. And then towards the back, there was like a section on hauntings and then a whole section on the hunt for the Yeti and Bigfoot. And it gets into the Patterson-Gimlin film and it gets into Point Pleasant and the Chupacabra. And so once I got into like adults believing in monsters type of stuff, that's when I started to like really have a shift in cryptozoology as a whole. I remember clear as day when I learned about Bigfoot. So I knew like, I knew the idea of Bigfoot before finding the book, because my grandfather lived in a wooded area and around a campfire, he told me like, yeah, there's wild men that stalk the woods and they're in every state and they're all over the world and yada, yada, yada. So I had plenty of Bigfoot nightmares that also like fueled my interest in everything.
Do you think he believed in that stuff? Or do you think it was like when they used to say to go out on a snipe hunt or something?
I don't know. With my old man, I couldn't tell when he was like just trying to like get my goat or, you know, or if he actually was legitimately like giving me a warning.
Sometimes you can't tell because they'll make it a joke, but they're actually seriously trying to warn you without trying to freak you out.
Yeah, right. Sure. But yeah, I mean, just the setting of it, you don't tell me at like, you know, 7 years old around a campfire that the woods that I'm growing up around aren't safe, like that kind of thing. But, so that's kind of where the seed for cryptozoology and my like love for cryptids and weird creatures and mythology kind of baked in. But then with the Family Video, constantly, like, it was just a weekly thing. We, you know, Friday, I get home from school, my dad gets home, we go get a movie for the weekend. So that definitely pulled me more into horror like imagery and that kind of stuff. I got really into comic books at that point. This is all to say that I focused on comic books and horror stuff for years. And then I'm also a musician. So I was doing, plenty of like flyers and t-shirts and album art and all that kind of crap until the pandemic hit and music stopped and I could finally like start doing stuff I wanted to do, which is where all of the cryptid stuff came from. Cause I had just had it on the back burner for what felt like 10 years.
Seems like that was when everybody's shift happened, where like everybody that's in the community actively now, it's because during that the pandemic they were able to like shift over. And same with a lot of podcasts too. It seems like most podcasts started around that time, and now we're getting to this weird spot where I've noticed shows are starting to trickle out a bit.
Right, which is I think, I don't know, it is a very like weird synchronistic thing that we all started at the same time. And now these are like some of my best friends. And I, you know, I look forward to seeing the same dozen people 6-7 times a year at the same events that we do every year now. So it is a kind of a, I'm not a superstitious person, but like, that's just a, it is bizarre that we all like did this shift and then all fell into this community at the exact same time, it feels like.
I feel like each other is what keeps everybody going too sometimes, because it's like, obviously none of us are going to get rich doing any of the stuff we're doing. We do it purely out of passion, but it's like the friends in the community are a hard part of what keeps everybody sticking around, is because it's like, if you don't end up meshing with the community, then those are the people that kind of end up trickling out. But if you're one of those people that just becomes best friends with everybody, then it's like, you just feel like if you stop doing what you're doing, you're going to like lose a part of yourself, because you're not going to have that opportunity to go out and like see these friends, because you're not vending or doing anything in the community. It's like there's not a justifiable reason for you to drive 6 hours to an event, you know?
Well, it's also nice, especially in this cryptic community, there's like no competition, you know, going from, you know, Jamie Snell especially could like attest to this, like going from comics and like, you know, Star Wars art and like all that pop culture-y, like cinema stuff, going from that to the cryptid community, I'm sure is like a huge breath of fresh air, where it's not just like people, you know, people with weird intentions or like, you know,
people cutting each other's throat.
Yeah, exactly. So I like that this is definitely more of a, you know, there are definitely gigs to be had from this line of work, but it's not as cutthroat as any other, you know, sub-genre, it seems like.
Say, and especially like if you establish like your art style too, it's kind of like there's a little bit of room for everybody, because it's like if you have a handful of different artists that are all good at these different art styles, you know, if Small Town Monsters, and I know you work with them, you know, if they want to do this movie and they want it to have this certain feel to it, they'll go to this artist. If they want this, they'll go to this artist. So it's like even within, there's enough for everybody to still be able to contribute together. It's not so like this is my artist, this is the only person I use. People are a lot more wishy-washy with who they're using for what, you know?
And, you know, the core group of people that are, you know, of artists in this whole thing, we all kind of know our lane, and everybody else knows their, you know, Conjure Dust, Danner, you know, he has a style, and he does it really, really well, and it's you know, it's very recognizable. Jonathan Dodd, however, can do any style, any way, and it looks like that's all he does. I'm definitely a one-trick pony, where I can only do art one way. I can't do anything painterly. It has to be a heavy inking illustrative style. So I've definitely cut myself into that little niche, where if they need something that's, you know, comic book-esque, very gritty, I can do that. But anything else, I'm terrible at. I can't do watercolors. I can't do gouache. I can't do any of it.
Honestly, though, I like the fine lines and like details, but still kind of that comic book feel to it, because there's not a lot of artists in the community that have, like you said, everybody kind of has their own lane and style. Like Joe from Cryptotheology, he does the very like comic booky, like 90s comic book, like colorful comic book kind of style. And then you do, like you said, kind of like the dark kind of comic book style and stuff. So it's like, even though there's people doing comic book style within the community, everybody has their own particular type to it. And I do enjoy the fact that like your art style is like very like dark and like gritty, because it kind of reminds me of like, I know Sin City's black and white and red or like vibrant colors, but it kind of has that kind of feel or like ambiance to it a little bit too, depending on like what your particular picture is.
Heavy line weights, heavy just black and ink or black and white work is like the main focus. And then up until this series started, like color wasn't really like my thing at all. Seth Breedlove is the only one that's making me like think that I'm good at with like color theory, because that was his like big thing when I started doing work for them, was your colors are so good. How do you do your colors? It's like, literally, this is like the last 10% of any piece is color work. Like it's the most afterthought I could ever have. So I'm glad that he at least likes it.
It meshes though, because you kind of have this thing going where it's like you have a lot of detail for the background, but you focus somebody's eye to the particular spot that you want it to be focused to. So it's like, if you pay attention, there's detail everywhere, but it's very like you focus on what you're intending the person to look at.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I always think that's kind of cool when people kind of have that style too, because then it's like, I appreciate all the detail, because a lot of people kind of just kind of, I don't want to say bleh, kind of over like the detail for the background, and they'll use like their focal point, and then they'll kind of just draw stuff very like stick figure in the background, like stuff that to kind of fill it in. But you kind of do the full detail, even in the background, you just kind of darken it out to bring the focal point to a specific spot.
I joke about that all the time, that, you know, if a piece takes 24 hours, to make, I would say roughly 18 hours of that is just detail work that literally nobody will notice.
See, it takes the right people though. And this is something I've talked about with a lot of like artists and stuff, is that I'm like one of those people that I like overlook at stuff. I'm like an overthinker. So I like notice every single like little detail and stuff and stuff. So like, I really appreciate when people put that really heavy detail into the background, because I appreciate that weird little stuff that nobody notices. Like one of the games I play with my daughter, cause she's an aspiring artist, is when I take her to like the art museum, we go through the paintings and stuff. I play this game with her where I tell her, tell me one fine little detail that you don't think anybody else would notice. And when she looks through these paintings, she'll find like a little spot off in the corner where there's like a person sitting there with like a bonfire or something, or just these little fine little details. So I'm trying to like teach her eye to like notice this little stuff, because it's just good to be
important.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to observe stuff and like appreciate fine art anyways. But like some of the pictures that I have, man, I got one where it's like that art style where when you look at it, it's like one solid image, but then you look at it more and that whole image is made up with like little detailed pieces. So it's like, I have one where you stand back and it looks like a skull, but then when you look up close, there's like a bunch of creatures hidden up the one cheek. Like there's no line of there actually being a skull, but because of the way it's put together, it's just all those fine little details, man. Like I can't say it enough. Like just because I have the brain that I do and I like to like stare at stuff for hours. Like I love that kind of stuff.
I'm really bad with like intention. I'm really bad at like thumbnail and sketching. I feel like most of my work is like I'm making it up on the fly. I just like, I made a cool shape and I like it, and then I just roll with it. And then I'm like, oh, well, that kind of looks like the Grafton monster. I'm going to keep running with it this way. So I appreciate when people can like have a full image in their head, like ready to go. I'm not that person though. I feel like a lot of these, I have a rough idea and then I'm like, Eureka. And then I make the rest of it on the fly. Like I said,
see, I'm nowhere near like you guys as like an artist and stuff, but just like putting like my t-shirt designs together, I do it the exact same way, where I start doing a design and I have no idea what I want it to look like. And then I start like mixing pieces, moving stuff around. And then that's when I'm like, all right, that looks like it might work. And then I kind of start going down that angle. So it's like every piece of art I do, there's like 10 variations of it. And it's like, you know, you can see the stopping point, right? Or like, all right, what if I try it this way? What if I try it this way? What if I try it this way? And they have like the same kind of basic base, but then they go off in like 10 different directions.
I'm definitely one of those, like,
you have to see it on the page first.
So I can do like a pretty good like outline of what I think it's going to look like, but 9 times out of 10, it looks completely different, you know, when I start like running with it. And I don't know. I'm definitely one of those people that like the piece is never finished. I'm putting it down. I'm done with it. I'm printing it. This is it. One of those things.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
And we are back. So let's hop right in. See, that's what I'm like with my podcast. And I had to learn that in the beginning, because I did my first episode, dude, I re-edited it like 6 times, because I'm a perfectionist too. So it's like, I kind of had to get to a certain point where the podcast, where it's like, I edit it. And then once I'm done editing it, I leave it there and I'm done with it. Because I know that if I don't make myself do that, then I'll keep going back and like re-editing and fixing it. So it's like, even when I try out new things that I'm trying to do on the show, it's like, I'll try it on an episode, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't work, then it's like, I'm still leaving it there. I'm not going to go back and edit it. Cause it's like, you almost have to do that to see your progression. Cause it's like, a lot of people, they want to go back and they want to correct their first piece. But if you keep doing that, then you're never going to be able to see where you came from. So it's like, you have to know when to stop, just so that you have the thing where you can look back 5-10 years from now and go, this is where I was and this is where I'm at now. And then if you want to redo a particular picture, I mean, just redo it as a totally different style later on down the line, instead of retouching that first piece again.
I've done it dozens of times.
It's like, it's hard to do that sometimes, man, especially like when you're doing digital art. And I assume that since you do illustrations, you do a lot of digital art, where it's like, once it's on paper, it's a lot easier just to set it down. But once you have like something digital or a digital medium, it's hard to do that, because you can literally finish it, finalize it, and then go back and edit the background whenever you want. So it like makes it so much harder to sit there.
Eventually, I've gotten to the point where I just offload whole like original pieces onto a a hard drive, an external hard drive. So it's off my rig. I can't touch it if I want to. And if I do want to, I have to do, you know, a tedious connection of wires and everything just to pull it back over. So I've kind of trained myself to just let it be. Like, it's good. Fuck it. Cut it. Print it. We're done.
That's literally what I have to do with my podcast. Like, if I leave it on my computer, I'll go back. But I literally have a hard drive that I put everything on when I'm done editing the episode, cover art, all of that. So there's nothing on my actual computer. And then I'm not tempted to, like, go back and mess with it.
if it's a whole, you know, run around just to get it back up, I'm going to lose interest. So it's worked so far.
You got to find what works for you and just kind of roll with it, man.
It's either that or I bite my hand instinctively to get myself to stop.
It's kind of funny how it's like the same issues go from no matter what medium you're doing. And I know that people don't necessarily consider like a podcast to be like artistic necessarily, but it's still kind of artistic in the means of doing your audio, all of that kind of stuff. But
the editing process alone makes me not want to do a podcast. So
see, that's my hard part jumping into video stuff is that it's like when I was back in high school, I did film class and I did radio. We actually had like a radio station stuff in my school. So I ended up getting like a full scholarship to go to a college for it. Didn't end up going just because of stuff going on in my personal life. But it's like I was proficient on Final Cut and a couple other editing programs. So it's so hard for me to want to go back and relearn it now because I had all the keystrokes and everything already figured out for that program. And now it's like that program is way too expensive. So I have a cheaper program. So it's like hard for me to force myself to go back through and relearn that program when I already knew how to do it before. So it's just, it's coming full circle, I guess. I'm sure I'll end up forcing myself to do it one day, but as far as right now, I'm good with the audio.
That's like where I'm at with, I draw one single style in one way. And if I don't do it that way, I think whatever I'm making looks like shit. And I feel like I'm too old to start a different style or a different medium or any of that. I just feel like, you know, I've been crafting this long enough. I don't want to fuss with being, a learner again. That's probably bad to say when you're almost 30, but
no, I mean, I'm honestly in the same boat half the time, man. It's like, I have all this other stuff I want to be doing, but it's just like, it's at that age where it's just like, man, I already have like this time to a science. This is what I do. This is how I do it. Yeah. It's like, not even necessarily that you feel too old to learn something new. It's just that you get so far into your comfort zone of like what you're used to working with and the problems that persist with that, that it's like, you don't want to take on another whole set of figuring something out and problems when you're still, you just figured out how to do this one where if you have an issue, you know how to kind of get around it and figure it out, you know?
Well, when I started drawing and, you know, doing all this, this was before I feel like I was even like a sentient being and I realized how much time passes like, you know, in the blink of an eye. And now the idea of like trying to load another, you know, decade of like trying to perfect a craft that's not what I'm currently doing just sounds awful.
See, that's exactly where I'm at, man. Cause it was like when I was in radio and I was in film class or whatever, like I was staff for like editing for radio and for the TV class. So it's like I did video stuff and I did audio stuff, but the art of the conversation, like just having a conversation with everybody, like this was like the main thing that I enjoyed doing the most was being like on air for that kind of stuff. But the editing stuff was also like the side stuff. So it's just like, this is the easy stuff to do. So it's like, I'm used to doing this kind of stuff. So it's like, again, hard to want to venture into the other stuff again, you know, it's like, I could do it, but this is my thing.
Sounds like a chore.
Exactly. And, I know that you said that you had an experience and I'm sure this will lead way into some more weird conversation. But actually before we get into that though, just a side little thing I could throw at you too. If you're trying to expand your like art style into stuff, man, just another cool idea would be you should do some art for UFO abductions because those would be really, really cool in your art style. If you start doing like Pascagoula, Fire in the Sky, like all those experiences drawn in your artistic style, it'd be really cool.
I have a few sketches ready to go. It's just a matter of, you know, finding time to actually dedicate to it. But I have like a full on Kelly Hopkinsville encounter scene that I wanted to do. So I already have the Kentucky Goblins, but I have an entire, like, it's essentially a one page comic. It's like eight panels of that whole night. And I've been wanting to do essentially a book of that, but with different encounters with a little synopsis of what happened. And then a little illustrated you know, timeline type thing. So
even if you just did that for just like big pictures of art that you did, like the exact encounter experience, you know, like, you know, like the, I'm trying to think of like a good example, because everybody's done like the car with like Mothman and everything like that. But if you started doing like the UFO abductions where it's like, you know, the exact when like Pascagoula, for example, when the guy's like on the operating table and stuff, and you do it in like your 50s art style where you can like see the fear in their eye and it kind of looks like the old sci-fi novel artwork, like that'd be really, really cool. Like, yeah, like the really dramatic stuff, especially for UFO abductions, that'd be super cool.
Have you read a Blue Book?
Yeah.
From Dark Horse?
Yep.
The comic? Yeah. That was like, why didn't I think of that? Like, when James Tinian's just like, you know, cornering the entire market between Department of Truth and now Blue Book. So that's also kind of kicked my motivation to do any of those.
Dude, just a side note, because I haven't thought about this comic book in a long time, and you seem like you're somebody that's kind of into obscure comic books. Have you heard of the comic book Proof?
No, I don't think so.
So, oh my God, man, I feel like I need to tell people in the community about this. So the whole premise of the comic book is that there's this organization that will go after like mythical creatures. But the main operative is a Sasquatch that wears like a suit. And like the first comic book they go after, they're looking for the Chupacabra, and he's like stealing people's like skin and stuff. And it's like this like FBI X-Files feeling thing where the one guy's an agent and his name is Proof, and he's Sasquatch. Okay. So it's like some off the wall, like maybe like 2008, 2010 kind of era comic book, but something that's pretty, pretty cool. Just a side note.
Have you read the Department of Truth?
I don't think I've read that one. No,
you should read the Department of Truth, because it's pretty similar to that, but it's definitely way more like there's way more at risk or at stake with the Department of Truth. It's the same cryptids are a big part of it, but it's mostly conspiracy theories at large. And it's the Tulpa theory that, you know, if enough people believe in something, it becomes reality. So the first book goes into like the Denver airport. It goes into the moon landing and flat earth, where, you know, enough people believe in this that it alters reality as we know it. So we have a firmament and you know, you can go to the edge of the earth or, the Satanic Panic is a huge part of the storyline with the main character. And it's not even a spoiler, because it's like right off the bat, the head of the Department of Truth is Lee Harvey Oswald, which that reveal in the first like two pages is fucking mind blowing and such a good, like it's low hanging fruit, but it's so good. Like, I don't know how anybody hadn't already like done this concept before. So Department of Truth is like one of my biggest, I've bought it, you know, 10 times just to give it to friends to say, read this book so we can talk about this already.
I'm surprised I haven't heard of that one, actually.
Yeah, it's through Image Comics. It's James Tinney that did Batman for 13 years. And the artist is really what pulled me in. His name is Martin Simmons. He has like the most, his art reminds me of like Sam Keith, who did The Max.
Oh, yeah, dude, I remember those.
It's very gritty and lots of like,
anything from Image always had that really good, dark, gritty feel to it. It's like the super 90s comic book company, you know?
Yeah. At this point, I need that. Like, I can't, the clean, especially these days where everything is digital now. I feel like most comics are digital. And Martin Simmons is like a full-on, like, he's just a prophetic, like, machine when it comes to these art panels. He does everything traditionally. It's all mixed media. It's insane.
That's why I liked Frank Miller so much, because he did that art style too, where he'd make it like, I don't want to say three dimensional, because that's not necessarily what he was going for, but it would be like, it would look like he was like drawing a page and then he went to grab red, but as he grabbed the red, it would like drip across the page and he would like leave it. So it wasn't like three dimensional, but it like kind of had that
fourth wall type thing.
Yeah, it had that like breaking the fourth wall kind of feel to it. Same with like Spawn did that a lot too, where it had like the countdown timer and everything, and it'd be like in the side of the panel and everything.
Well, on top of that, so in the Department of Truth, there's a like a Bigfoot special where it's just an extended issue where it follows, it's essentially a letter from a father to his son, like apologizing for like ruining their family because he believed in Bigfoot so much and it became an obsession.
The curse of Sasquatch.
it brings me to tears like every time. I feel like I sob like a baby when I reread that. It's so it's so well written and so good that I have to reread it every once in a while. But yeah, The Department of Truth is like, I think it's my favorite graphic novel of the last decade.
Man, I'll have to read that. I'm honestly surprised that I haven't heard of that, because I used to be the guy that would like, there's all the mainstream comics. I would look for anything that was like weird and off the wall. Like I got into like Crossed for a while, and that was one of those weird ones where you'd go to the comic book store and they'd make you show your ID. If you're like, I need an ID to buy a comic book. They're like, yeah, you haven't seen this comic book.
Also has gold in a paper bag, and you know,
yep.
Look both ways. You're crossing the street with it.
And it was funny because my dad knew I was into comic books. So I was like 16 and he just was like, my son likes dark comic books. What do you got? And the guy somehow gave him Cross. So I got the first one and I'm like reading it. My dad walks up and it was like one of the scenes where it's like, you know, there was the guy that used to run around with the giant, like cut off horse dick and like beat people with it. It was one of those scenes. And my dad's like, what in the hell are you reading? And he like started scrolling through it. And there was the same one in that comic book where there's the family that doesn't want to stay with the group and they get left behind. And then they all get like brutally like murdered and, I don't want to ruin the feel of the show, but the R word and stuff like that. Yeah, and there's just that page where it's just the widespread of just that happening. And my dad's like, what in the fuck did I buy you? Like, what? Yeah.
The Bizarro Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah, dude. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a comic book that's like there's some like really lewd comic books, but that's just like, I've never seen a gorier comic book in my life. Like,
have you seen Red Room?
I have not, actually.
Ed Piskor,
I'm assuming Red Room, like the dark web Red Room concept.
Yeah, right. It's just that. And it's just an excuse for him to draw like the most fucked up, like torture scenes, really. But he has like so much humor throughout it. It's so good. And I love just digging into the pages of like, you know, viscera and people being, you know, torn apart by chainsaws. And it's just like the most like high five in your buddy saying fuck yeah, like comic I've ever seen.
It's literally like Cross, because there's like a lot of comic relief in that for as fucked up as it is. Like, for anybody that isn't familiar with these comic books, like the art style looks like a Cannibal Corpse cover. Like,
yeah, it's very, very brutal. Then on top of it, you know, the subject matter. But
I don't feel like those comic books would make it nowadays with today's culture. They'd be like, no.
I feel like there's definitely an underground for it. Because like I said, Red Room is actually pretty popular, I would say. And like I said, it's just the most like, fuck yeah, brutal, just like black and white ink work pretty much throughout it. But I don't know. It's a funny premise and there's plenty of humor throughout it. It's just very gnarly images.
I mean, I don't feel like people realize like how dark comic books get, because you see all this stuff that gets turned into TV shows and they cut stuff out. Like, I was a big fan of The Walking Dead as a comic book, and I watched the show and I was not a fan because they cut so many important details out that it didn't make any sense. Like, prime example I always use is when the governor goes to the prison. He looks like they just killed his zombie daughter. It's like, why is he that mad? In the comic book, Michonne tortures him. She pops his eye out with a spoon. She like nails his like private parts to like the board with like a hammer and stuff. Like, it's so much darker and so much more brutal that they leave all the good parts out. Like, even when they're running away from the prison and like the Lori gets killed with the baby, it's like they don't show that because they can't on TV. But in the comic book, the governor runs up behind him, blasts her with a shotgun, and blows up the baby. And it's like they try to turn this stuff into like TV shows or movies, and it's like you can't do it adequately because you can't show the stuff in comic books on a film, and people just don't understand how crazy comic books really get, because they just see the Marvel comics and DC comics and they don't know all this like dark underground of comics.
What they need to do is they need to shoot everything scene for scene like it is in the comic, and then just take all of the deleted scenes and all of the horrible parts, and then do a full extended cut in the DVD. So people are like, what in the fuck is this?
They did that with Sin City, because the edition that I bought of it, it was the one where it was the extended version. So they had it split by each comic book. But they did that like scene for scene, because Frank Miller was one of the directors. So they used that is the script. So it was like, it was weird because I've never seen a comic book movie other than Sin City, when you watch it divided up in the extended edition, that's like line for line, like the exact panel is exactly how they do each scene in the movie. Like, it was fantastic.
I need to give it, I've never gotten into Sin City.
Really? Oh my God. Yeah. That's like, I didn't want to sound generic, but it's honestly one of my favorite comic book series I've ever read.
Yeah, it's a household name for a reason, but
it's very like noir style. That's what gets me. Yeah, it's like,
I know that, which I feel like I've watched parts of it on TV. It's just something that never pulled me in.
Honestly, though, like I said, if you watch the whole movie, how they present it, it's almost done like Pulp Fiction, where it's not in order. It's kind of like scattered. They jump back and forth between stories. But in the comic book, it's like each comic book is all happening in the same city, but it's different people's perspectives. And just at one certain point, everybody kind of crosses each other, and that's about it. It's like one scene in a bar that they all cross. But for the most part, it's all their own split stories. So if you watch Sin City, or everybody that watches Sin City or hasn't seen it, the normal edition's fine. It's like Pulp Fiction. But if you really want that comic book feel, you have to find the extended edition that has it, where you can watch basically the entire comic book. Like, it'll have like the movies, the first four comic books, and they never actually did the other three or four of them, actually. Because A Dame to Kill For was really loosely based on the comic book story, and that was actually like in the middle of the stories they already did. But yeah, that split edition, fantastic. Like, that's the only way to watch it, because when I see it on TV, it's like I lose the interest, because I want to just see the split story edition of it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go straight for that, and I'll report back.
Yeah, you have to let me know what you think about it. And then you'll have to read the comic books, too, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So before we start getting off on another tangent about comic books, because it seems to be something that happens all the time, it's because I was a huge comic book nerd growing up forever. Oh, yeah. So anytime anybody comes on and brings up comic books, I can't help myself. I get into a side tangent about it. But we will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in. Getting into some of your encounters and stuff, I know that before we started recording, you mentioned that you've only had one major encounter, but it's something that's bothered you for years, and I don't know if that's because you haven't been able to figure it out or what, but I would absolutely love to hear about it, because I've been curious since you brought it up, and I'm glad that you didn't give me any hints, because I like just giving you my honest reaction as you tell me the encounter.
Okay, so I'm going to preface this with, though I love the paranormal, and I love cryptids, and I love all of this stuff, I am a skeptic. Like, I want to believe any of this, and I don't think everybody's lying or misidentifying things. So there's a point where I know that something strange is going on, but my like way of thinking doesn't allow me to just like fully believe everything.
Honestly, that's how I am too. And I feel like that's the good way to be, because that's the only way that you can really get somewhere with it. And I mention this all the time on the show, that if you're too into the, like, it's okay to be into what you're into, but if every bump in the night is a ghost, then you're not really getting anywhere. Like, you have to be skeptical, and then when you can't figure something out with your rational mind, then it gets into the realm of the mysterious and the unknown, and that's when you know you got something, you know? But if you don't go through the rational thoughts first, and you just jump to a conclusion, then you're not really helping any research with anything, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, my life would be much more colorful if I was able to just, like, go with it and believe that, you know, and believe in these strange things like wholeheartedly, but I don't know. It's just not the way I think right now.
But, I mean, being a huge Sasquatch guy, man, I'll hear about some of the encounters that happen in certain areas, and it's just like, like, I'm from Michigan. I live in the Detroit area. When I hear these like encounters near the Detroit area, I'm like, we live in a city where there's no woods really over here, unless you drive this far out. Like, there's not any Sasquatch you're seeing down in Detroit. I'm sorry, but no.
Right. So, but yeah, I've told this story a couple times now. I was on Jim Harold's campfire a couple years ago, and I met Jim, and we actually talked about this at the first Monster Fest, and there was kind of a weird synchronicity with that, and I'll mention that towards the end. But I went to the Art Academy of Cincinnati right after high school. So 2013, I moved to Cincinnati, and this would be my second year. I was a sophomore. I was living in a dorm above there's like a local Belgian waffle place. And I didn't have my car when I was living in Cincinnati, so I would bike everywhere. And I would bike from downtown Cincy across the river into Newport, Kentucky, and then across from Newport to Covington, Kentucky, and then back over the bridge to my dorm. So this is just like a weekend thing that I would do. And one weekend, it was cold, so I'm pretty sure it was like, it was probably like February. I do that whole routine. I wake up on a Sunday, and I start biking over to Newport, and I get done with my little rounds in Newport, and I go over to Covington is, it's Kentucky, so it's all hills and inclines and peaks and valleys. I'm just like strolling around in downtown Covington, checking out the library. I get to a stoplight and I just kind of hang out and look around, and I look to my right, and against a building, there's this guy just like reclining on his elbow. I'm assuming he's homeless. He looks like he had the shit absolutely beaten out of him. He had like cake in his, or blood caked in his beard. He had blood caked on his neck and, you know, around the like collar of his shirt, and his eyes were like swollen, almost completely shut. And I like, you know, give him a look down, and we acknowledge each other. I like, you know, white guy smile at him and nod. And a couple seconds go by, the light turns green. I'm on an incline and I start hauling ass about 8 blocks in like 40 seconds before I get to another red light. As I, you know, start braking and I come to a stop at this red light, I'm scanning around, and catty corner to me, I see the same guy, and he's looking at me as I'm like approaching my stop. So I'm already like kind of alarmed and confused, because I just saw this guy laying on his elbow 40 seconds ago. He didn't have a bike next to him. He wasn't at a bus stop. Unless he like jumped in a buddy's car and they like hightailed it around me, there's no way he could have been at point A and point B before me. And then on top of that, him staring at me as I came to the stop, like really kind of fucked with me. So my fight or flight like really kicked in, and I just like turned around and peeled out and went straight back to my dorm room, and like I started to calm down, and then I didn't think about it like for the rest of the day, probably 2 days. And then I was just in the computer lab with some friends, and we must have been talking about something that jogged my memory, and I started to think about how strange that entire thing was. And it felt like, I don't know. You know how, I don't know about you, but there's like a time of day where the sunlight hits everything just right, and I feel like I'm in a dream. I don't know if that's like disassociating or.
Yeah, it's like that. How do I even stretch? It's like dusk kind of feeling where it's.
Yeah, like all of my dreams have like a sepia tone to them. So when I think back on this, it feels like a dream just because of how strange that whole thing like panned out between, you know, like I said, less than a minute, that guy's there, then he's over here. And then also just like how personal it felt with him, like already having like his swollen ass eyes locked on me as I'm coming up. So I don't know. The whole thing felt very sinister and personal, and it scared the hell out of me, but then I just forgot about it. So, and then also, you know, researching all this weird stuff, I started looking into, I found out what paranormal apathy is, or what that whole like part of the phenomena is. So then I started to like dig down that rabbit hole, and that's kind of what it felt like. But also it wasn't like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to call it. It's just it's a weird story too, because I can't like categorize it with anything. It's not like a vanishing hitchhiker. It doesn't feel like it's a doppelganger type thing. I don't know this guy.
It kind of feels almost more like a, like, I don't know if you get into the whole quantum physics type stuff, but almost kind of feels like that glitch in the matrix kind of concept. Right.
That's kind of what, when I was on Jim Harold's campfire, that's a, it's a head scratcher at least.
That or some kind of like deja vu kind of thing going on. But
yeah,
I'm kind of one of those people that gets into like the weird side of like quantum physics and stuff. And I do think that like time slips are theoretically possible. So, sure. I mean, it could have been some type of a time slip. And if that was the case, maybe both of you are aware of it, and both of you were feeling the same thing at the same time, looking at each other like, wait, I just saw this person. Because it seems like sometimes there's these weird spots where like these things happen. So I'm kind of curious if in that same location, if there's been anybody else who's reported kind of having this like double reality feeling kind of happening.
Yeah. I've never thought of it from like his perspective. Maybe he was also like freaked the fuck out that he just saw me, and I don't know.
And you said was in Kentucky, right? Is this like Southern Kentucky by chance?
No, this is Northern.
It's like Northern. Right, because I was going to say that there's actually a particle collider in Northern Tennessee that they openly basically say that they're trying to open up portals to other realities. So anywhere that there's these hydrogen particle colliders, it seems like there's these instances of these weird like time lapses. So if it was Southern Kentucky, that would have been like super weird, because that wouldn't have been that far off from where this other supposed hydrogen particle collider is.
So then, so there's that. And that's just kind of like boggled my mind. It's been something I've thought about since, you know, it's been going on 11 years. It's just a weird thing that I've never been able to like really put my like finger on it. Like, this is exactly what happened. Oh, this makes sense. So then, I met Jim Harold at, last year's Monster Fest, the first one. And, I went up to him and I introduced myself. And at that point, it had only been like, I don't know, 10 months since I had told my story. So I was like, oh yeah, I had this story, yada, yada, yada. And then he's like, it's crazy you're meeting me here today. I just got an email about your story like 2 days ago. And he pulls up this email that a guy sent about my story, where he had, in his town, there was apparently two twin brothers that would dress like each other and they would fuck with people that way. Which sounds, I mean, really good. Like, unless they both got beaten half to death or got prosthetic makeup done so that they look so, you know, they stand out so well. It's a possibility. But then, just, I want to say 3 weeks ago now, I was listening to Belief Hole, the podcast. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with them?
Yeah.
They did a crossover episode with Expanded Perspectives. And in that episode is essentially that exact story, except this guy's story was cooler because there was like a guardian angel element to it. Where this guy, it's in San Francisco, pretty much the same thing. This guy walks out of his building and he sees a homeless guy that looks like disheveled and just like pretty, you know, not doing very well. And the guy says to him, "I see you covered in blood." And he's like, "Well, that's fucking weird." And he gets on his skateboard and starts going down one of those San Francisco inclines. And there, apparently, you can like time the lights. So if you're at this intersection, you've got 30 seconds, and, you know, three intersections down there, the light will turn green. So he had it like timed to where he won't have to stop and he can just roll through this green light. He sees this guy when he leaves his building. He gets on his skateboard, starts going down this incline. Right before he gets to this red light that's about to turn green, he sees the exact same guy again, and it freaks him out. So he stops, and right as he stops and like slides out, a car runs the red light and would have, you know, clobbered him, killed him right there. So that was the only, so far, that is the only similar story I've ever been able to find where you see what is essentially a homeless guy in two places. And there's a, I would call it an exchange. This guy didn't talk to me and he didn't like save my life or anything, but that's the closest similar story that I could find.
This is going to sound weird, but little instances that you don't necessarily think about at the time, maybe there is somewhat of a guardian angel aspect to it. Because, you know, maybe this guy showed up twice because you said that you gung-ho'd after the first light. Something kind of weird. Maybe if you didn't gung-ho it after that first light,
maybe there was
there could have been something that happened. There could have been a car that, came by or whatever. Like, just these little weird instances where it's just, it almost kind of makes you wonder if it's purposely set up so that something different happens in the timeline, or even on another side, that maybe there was supposed to be an interaction with this guy. So like reality gave you a second chance to have some type of interaction with this guy for whatever reason, that it maybe would have played a different course in your life. But it's like that second chance to possibly go down a different path or avenue. But again, you don't realize it at the time, or you never know where it could have led to or what could have been changed just off of just that 2 second little thing, because people share these guardian angel stories and sometimes it'll be like, you know, they'll make awkward eye contact with somebody for an extra 5 seconds, but because they made extra eye contact for that extra 5 seconds, they didn't get in their car 5 seconds earlier. And then there would have been this collision that happened, like the car right in front of them, like just these weird little instances that end up leading up to everything. And
that's true.
I think everything happens for a reason in this reality. I mean, whatever construct you kind of believe in, I feel like things purposely fall in place for a reason. So regardless of what the interaction was, I feel like there's some type of grander purpose to why it happened, even if it just seems so like minuscule and just not anything extravagant, you know?
I've just chalked it up to just a weird thing that I can't figure out, and has, you know, like I said, been kind of a thorn in my side. ever since.
See, I still kind of go back to that like glitch in reality just off of the aspect that he also looked at you weird that second time. So it's like both of you were having that same double vision experience. And for you, at least, I mean, if you're seeing that, I mean, that almost kind of confirms that you're not crazy seeing this guy twice. The guy is feeling the same exact way as you. So there was something weird that happened there. Because if this happened back when you were in college and stuff, I feel like it was before the whole like internet pranking thing really became that huge, because that kind of came with like the TikTok era. So it's like, I feel like there's less of a possibility, even this happening 10 years ago, that it was somebody just doing a prank just because, you know?
And I haven't like scoured Reddit for it. I feel like, you know, if it happened to me today, and you know, if it was the similar circumstance where like nothing has ever happened to me, this weird, very, I'm not going to say it's very unique, but it's just, like I said, I've tried so hard to find something similar to it in it. I finally just found a story that almost matches it 3 weeks ago. But at the time, it felt like I didn't even like, I'm not going to say I didn't care, but it just wasn't something that I like dug into. I want to say it was like a year or two later that it really started to like, what the hell was that all about? Like, what? I have no like reference point for it. So it's been something that just like pops up every once in a while. It's also a thing where I want to experience something strange so bad, but I think because I want it so bad, nothing is ever going to happen. So I feel like that's my one thing, and I just kind of like squandered it. So it's like, you know, 10 years later, I'm never going to like have an answer for it or anything. So it's, I don't know.
Talk about purposely happening though, too. I mean, something like that may have purposely happened just to keep your connection with there is something mysterious in this world. Yeah. Because sometimes it's like if people don't have any experience at all, they'll kind of just give up on that line of thought. But sometimes it just takes one off the wall experience, and it's enough juice for somebody the rest of their life to keep diving into the stuff that's on the strange and obscure side. And I mean, I feel like as a whole, being aware of this kind of stuff is kind of bringing a different light to how we function in society. And I feel like it's starting to branch out where I'm noticing like a lot more people believe in extraterrestrials, the paranormal, cryptids, and all this kind of stuff. So I feel like it's one of those things where everybody in life gets some type of experience that it kind of opens the doorway or completely closes them off to the possibility of there being more to this reality than what most people assume that there is. And maybe that was your one. And if you didn't have that, maybe you wouldn't be a cryptid artist right now, because you would have went down a different path, because it wouldn't have kept your interest in there being something mysterious.
Open the whole rabbit hole from, you know, just different phenomena in general. But yeah, I mean, my wife, of all people, had like one of the coolest UFO sightings last year. She doesn't care about UFOs. she'll humor me with this kind of stuff. You know, when I'm reading a book and I'm like, oh, well, this is cool. This happened. Or, you know, if we're watching something, I'm like, that is a big UFO abductee phenomena. And then I'll just go into this whole thing, and she'll smile and she'll, you know, oh, that's interesting. But she saw six diamonds in the sky on her way to her parents' house last year at like 8 a.m. So she told me about it like in real time. She got to her parents and was like, I just saw the weirdest thing in Rich Valley, which is like the area, and described it and like drew it on like a sticky note, the pattern that they were in. So I was like, well, that's strange. So I went on the Enigma app, and in the exact same area reported in 1986 was one of these diamond things, like in the exact same field, supposedly. So I was like, oh, well, there's a trail, we could follow it. I haven't been able to find anything else. But, you know, the person who doesn't give a shit about any of this stuff is the person that gets to have an experience like that.
Dude, I'm kind of curious if there might be a military base in that area, because that's always the first thing I look into when there's weird UFO phenomenon. But yeah, it does definitely seem that way. And like I said, it's one of those things that the people that have the crazy experiences, I feel like they either, one, they don't want anything to do with it at all, or they go all in with it. And then there's a lot of people that aren't in with this at all. They'll have a crazy experience and just totally ignore it. And it's just like, damn, the people that like want the experience, it's like they may never get it. Like, people that are out here squatching may find trace evidence, but they'll never have that squatch experience. But, you know, somebody doesn't care about Sasquatch, they're going to walk out their back door one day and see Sasquatch rifling through their garbage and just never tell anybody about the experience. But other people would, like, you know, trade a limb to have that experience.
That's another thing that goes through my mind. You know, whenever I'm like driving in the middle of the night and I'm like, this is like prime Squatch territory. Like, surely I'll something eventually. But that's also like, who's going to fucking believe me? I've made my entire adulthood like about this stuff. So if I saw anything, nobody is going to believe a word I say, because all I do is immerse myself in this, you know, type of stuff. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword where I want it so bad and I hope something happens at some point, but it's going to, you know, it's just going to be for me at that point. It's not going to be for the greater good of, you know, like research or anything. It's just going to be some confirmation for me, hopefully.
See, that's what I've said to myself about, because every time I'm driving to an event, I'm in the middle of just nowhere driving on like a highway road. I do the same thing. I'm always looking, you know, I feel like Hunter S. Thompson, except for it being back country, it's Squatch country. Just freaking out in the front seat. This is Squatch country. Yeah. But yeah, if I ever have that like roadside crossing experience, I don't want to say it's a generic experience, but it's the most commonly heard experience when it comes to the Sasquatch stuff. So again, being somebody in the community, it's like, I've had a few experiences that I've never shared on the show just because it's like, I don't think people would believe many ways or think I'm just like pulling at straws here. Like, so it's like, if I do ever have that like one-on-one, I see something experience, I might tell it here and there, but it's like, it's going to be for me more than anything. Because we're those people, like nobody's going to be like, of course the Sasquatch guy had a Sasquatch experience. Like,
yeah. So, but yeah, that's my one single unexplainable happening. And I think that's probably the only one I'll ever get.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts, so instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out Cryptoteology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And you guys can go and check out Big Ape Threads for all of their Bigfoot and cryptid related designs. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there in Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds. But when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over, so don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And don't forget to check out the affiliate link for Sticker Mule to receive a $10 credit towards your first purchase. Over there, you can get a bunch of stickers printed, t-shirts, posters, all that kind of stuff. So if you guys are another podcast and you guys are looking for good quality stuff in order to print your logos on, Sticker Mule is definitely the place for you. And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show. And we are back, so let's hop right in. Dude, it's still a crazy fascinating one, though, because, like I said, I kind of categorize that more with, like, the time glitch ones, and it's like, I don't hear those very often, so it's like, you may not have had a crazy experience according to you, but it's still something that not a lot of people come across, so it's like, you did have a crazy experience, you just don't necessarily realize, like, how crazy it was because you were there instead of being on the outside hearing about this and trying to, like, rationalize what it could have possibly been.
Yeah, and then also, like I said, it just, at this point, I've like played it in my head so many times that it feels so surreal and it feels like dreamlike. I know it happened and I haven't gone back to Covington, Kentucky, but I could probably find both corners again pretty easily. But it's just, you know, it just feels so far removed at this point that I have to like question, like, is this exactly how I recall it? Like, you know, am I filling in something? So
I mean, that's how I feel about my main experience too. I don't know if you've heard me tell it on the show, but seeing that like weird creature in the basement of that mental hospital that I used to urban explore. It's like this skin. It was like the skinwalkers. Well, I don't want to say skinwalker because I kind of categorize it as a Wendigo, even though I don't know for sure, going off of like the native's depiction of a Wendigo being this like lanky zombie like creature and not this like deer headed creature. But it's like, it's been so long. It's been like almost 10 years now that it's like when I replay it in my head, it's like I see it scene for scene like a movie, but it's just like you question your own line of thought that if you've like added details without realizing it or whatever, but it's like I try to tell the story as like simplistic as I possibly can because I don't want people to think I'm like making the story out to be something way crazier than it actually is. Like I saw this weird creature in this basement. I don't try to play it up as like more than that, but the more time that goes by, the more I like question it. It just seems more like dreamlike than anything, even though it's like, I know what I saw, but it's like your brain after a certain point, again, turns everything into these like nostalgic feeling like dreams where it's like, you think of your childhood and it feels more like a dreamscape than it does like something literal and real, you know?
There are points, you know, in my memories that I know I can see them as they're happening, but there are other points that I feel like are just like, you know, it's a story that my mom told me that I did, and I'm seeing it in a, you know, my imagination is filling in the blanks based off of how she explained it to me. So I just, I'm very bad at like believing myself the way I the way I retell it and the way I see it in my head. I have to second guess all the time.
Hey, but that means that at least you're kind of keeping a rational mind on it, even though it is a weird experience you had. Cause it's like, if you just start full blown throwing it, like, this is what it is. This is what it was. Cause anytime I tell about my experience, I say, I think this is what it is, but I don't know for sure. It could have been something totally different. If you start lodging in your head that you know what it is, then I feel like you kind of pull yourself away more from what it could possibly be because then you just get this single lane thought on this is exactly what it was.
And when I heard that that Beliefful episode with the story that sounds exactly like mine, I had the biggest no fucking way. And like I re-listened to it like 4 or 5 times in a row to like get every detail because I have been looking far and wide for something that specific, and that was it. So I need to keep looking because if there's one, there surely is going to be more. You know, I don't know if people are telling these stories or not, but
not to like keep throwing it back in your head, but going on Reddit, man, and looking up like the glitch forms, you might actually find something that's surprisingly similar to that. Cause there's a lot of feeds that are dedicated to just people catching like glitches in the Matrix or like,
I've done plenty of scouring. I haven't like hard typed in like keywords or anything, on Reddit, but that's probably going to be the next, if I decide to keep pursuing it. Cause like I said, it's just,
cause you'll find a lot of stories of people like passing the same dog twice and stuff. And it's like, that stuff's very similar to yours. It's on the same vein. It's just, it seems like there was two sides of the phenomenon that both sides were aware of where it's like, usually people have that double glitch in the Matrix. It's like the other person won't be aware, but this is going to sound weird. The whole NPC concept that most people, when there's a glitch, it's like they're interacting with an NPC. So they're not recognizing the glitch. But if you have two people that are conscious and not necessarily NPCs, then both of them would be aware of the glitch. And then you'd have that awkward experience of like, wait, I just saw you.
I literally, up until you said it, I had never thought about him looking at me as maybe like a similar confusion point. Like I've always kind of took it as a malevolent thing that, you know, it was aimed at me and the feelings that I was getting were intentional. And that's why my fight or flight like kicked in. So I don't know if it was about the, you know, it was about the scenario, but it was more about he felt like he was intentionally trying to like get an emotional response out of me.
Say it may have just again been him horrified, or maybe he was even thinking like if he looked like he was beat up, maybe he got again beat up and he was almost like questioning if like he had a concussion or something like that, you know, where he was just like, oh my God, like what? I'm seeing double vision in this guy now. Like he may have looked scary to you because he was having a panic attack in like his own mind of like, is there something mentally wrong with me after whatever just happened to me? Like,
yeah, it's so, but I mean, I've been looking for some sort of, explanation. I've been trying to have some sort of weird experience. My wife and I live in a house that was built in 1867. I was like, surely something weird's here. So surely, you know, I had plenty of like weird feelings while we were working on the house. There's nothing. The house was filled with love for decades.
See, the problem is the phenomenon is aware of who's not aware of it. So if you're already aware of it, it's like, all right, we don't need to give that guy an experience. He's already knows about us. We got to get the people that aren't aware of us to know that we exist. So it's just like they pass us over because they already know that we believe in them.
I'm already like a super paranoid and anxious person. So I also like, I think of every possible scenario, like for my self-preservation. So I also think that like, you know, I'm one step ahead of everything. You know, I'm turning on lights before I enter a room. I'm, you know, getting to the very end and then turning off a light. So there's something like, you know, I have like primal brain where I equally want to experience something that will like shift my worldview. And I equally don't want to deal with the thought process of it afterwards.
See, I've gotten stupid in the aspect of like, I was like that for a while, but now it's like, I don't want to say I crave an experience that bad, but like when I go on like a paranormal like investigation or something like that, it's like there'll be this like weird hole. And rather than being that guy that's like, oh, I'll be the last one in there, now it's like I've gotten to the point where I'm the one who's like trying to actively be like, I'll go in the hole and I'll go into like a haunted building and I'll like be the one that like jumps around a corner real quick, trying to see if there's something there, you know? It's like, I've gotten done with it now where it's like, I'm like trying to chase this stuff. So it's probably like, oh shit, this guy's, he's onto us too much. We gotta back up a little bit here. Be like, all right, weird hole with a weird jail cell looking thing that's kind of buried in the ground. I'll go in. I don't care. Like we went to Blackford County Jail in Indiana. And there's like this part where you go into the basement and then there's like this hole in the wall that leads into this weird area. There's these two bricked off rooms and we went there. It's like, everybody got this weird feeling. They didn't want to go through the hole. And as soon as they're like, who wants to go through the hole first? It was like, before they even finished the sentence, I was already like fully in there. I'm like, is anybody else coming? Ghosty, is you in here?
I want to say that that's the kind of person I would be like, you know, if I experience something, I hope that I'll want to dig into it further, but I also kind of know myself and I'm kind of chicken shit when it comes down to it.
See, I'm the guy that I feel like I'd be the first one to be like, all right, we hear a squatch in this direction. Let's go see it. But here's the thing. As soon as we actually see it, I'll probably be the first one out of there. It's like, if I go into a place of paranormal investigating and I'm the first one that sees a ghost, I'll be the first one that's the quickest out of that room too. First one in, first one out.
Yeah, right. So, but I'm so hopeful, you know, I, on my business cards, I have facetiously put abductee hopeful, and I know that if something were to happen like that, if I were to experience like missing time or, you know, any of the tropes, it would fucking destroy me. I would become a recluse.
Be like, looking like Charlie Day with the map. Yeah. Well, be like, aliens are real.
Either that, or I feel like at that point I wouldn't want anything to do with this shit anymore. Like, that's kind of how I gauge if I believe an experiencer, like the Travis Waltons of the world, where they make an entire like livelihood off of this one thing. I kind of like have more of a skeptical eyebrow at, because when I think of like something like that, putting myself in their shoes, I feel like it would absolutely like destroy me to like have that kind of information.
Especially the abduction stuff versus like a cryptid sighting. Cause the abduction stuff, it's like people are having like weird experiments and like surgical things done to them. It's like, that's one thing. Seeing a Sasquatch, being up in like a tree stand with a Sasquatch below you is one level of fear. But like when you're strapped to a table and they're physically doing stuff to you, it's a whole other level of like emotional and physical trauma.
Yeah, I was just in my bed where I was just driving down the road and now I'm in a room full of light and being prodded. So yeah, I'm hoping I don't regret that one day, but it is a funny little, this is, you know, I want to experience something. I don't know how much I want to experience.
So that's where I'm at too. It's like, I would like to experience like an abduction just for the sake of like having that as like an experience under my belt. But on the other side, it's like, you're tough until you go through it. And then all of a sudden you're just like, bro, I can't even look at flashing lights outside my window without going into panic mode.
So, cause I'm so fascinated by the near-death experience but having to be on the brink of death is also just a stupid thing to hope, you know, to wish for that kind of, you know. And I don't want to do DMT. I was just
about to bring that stuff up, man, that I was like a hardcore psychonaut for years. Like I'd done everything, but that DMT, like I never made it into that next step. Like I listened to everybody's experiences doing it, but it's like the means is there, but it's like as many psychedelic experiences as I've been through, it's like, I don't know if that bridge would like completely alter like my perception of like how I view everything. And it's like, I'm interested in that happening, but on the other side, it's just like, you hope that it's going to be a positive outlook and change, right? And not like now I'm scared that there's, you know, geometric elves controlling my reality, even if I'm not smoking DMT, you know, like.
It's the time dilation thing that really scares me. The, you know, the anecdotes about people, you know, living 25 years in a 6 minute like time span, like that whole thing. It freaks me the fuck out, because, you know, I dabbled with acid once, and I wasn't aware of like the loops. I didn't do enough homework. I wasn't aware of time loops and being stuck in a loop and all that kind of stuff.
Dude, my friends and I got into one of those so bad once that we were like, every time it would restart, we'd like move furniture around and stuff, thinking that we needed to like break the loop.
I started to like, the way I would ground myself was just going piss. I would just go to the bathroom and I would just like try to pee. And I was like, I'm a flesh and blood fucking creature. Everything's cool. I'm peeing right now. Like this is real. I can hear it. Like, so that was the only thing that like kind of, that was my token that like kept me completely in. But the DMT stuff where people say that they're just living like decades of time and the 6 minutes that they're out scares the shit out of me. Cause I think about what, you know, if I really want to like psych myself out and give myself like vertigo, I think about, what if I'm still just like sitting on a bench at my buddy's lake house watching the water on acid right now, and I come to, and this last like 4 years since that has just been in my head. Like that whole trope and that whole like glitch in the matrix type like heady shit, it kills me. I can't do it,
dude. I've had that stuck in my head since the VR sets became a thing in like 2013. Yeah. Of like, did we all put these VR headsets on and we're all now in some other reality? Like, this is something that's been in the back of my mind for the past like 10 years, like. And just for me, man, like I didn't experience it through like DMT or anything, but I don't know if you've heard, again, all my experiences and stuff, but I had this like astral projection thing that's like gone on my like entire life. And I had like one particular experience where I was calling it dimension hopping, where I was trying to find my girlfriend in these different realities, but every single time I found her, it was her, but it wasn't like my version of her. And then I would go to sleep and then the same thing would recycle. And it was like a dream overnight. But I don't know if it was necessarily a dream, getting into like all my weird stories with everything, but it felt like I was gone for like 6 months. And every time I go to sleep, I would wake up and it would be in a different reality, but I'd find her and it wouldn't quite be her. So when I finally like woke up in our reality and like turned to look at her, like, I'm not a very emotional guy, but like, bro, I was tearing up because I felt like I was gone for 6 months, and that time dilation like mentally like fucked me up. And that experience was so intense, and I don't normally remember dreams. And my whole thing was that like I would go to these weird places and astral project, and I'd get sleep paralysis after, which is how I like recognize it as not being a dream. And when that happened, I got sleep paralysis. So like ever since then, dude, I've been like almost completely convinced about the whole idea of different dimensions, the astral dimension, and like different levels of like reality, just because of like how prolific and like I can remember every single detail of that dream, like vividly. Like it did not feel like a dream. Like it's kind of like how people describe the psychedelic experience, is that it felt realer than like real. And that's like a hard thing to explain unless you've been there before.
Unless you've been there. Yeah.
But fucking horrifying, dude. Like I don't know if that's not like the same as like a alien time dilation, but it's like the closest thing that I have is a reference point. And even that reference point is horrifying.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back, so let's hop right in.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I like my agency, and I like being in control. And I can't, you know, when I did my acid experience, it was because of the pandemic, and it was because of the uncertainty of everything. And I'm not there anymore. Like, you know, I'm in full-on dad mode at this point, and I have to, like, be responsible. And
dude, you and me both. My last mushroom experience was when the pandemic started, and I think that's what messed it up for me. It was because I ate mushrooms. I sat on the couch. I'm watching TV and stuff. And the next thing, my dad texts me and says, like, oh, you can't leave the house unless you have like paperwork saying you can. I'm like, yeah, right. The fuck are you talking about? Like, this is bullshit. The fuck? And I turn on the TV and they're like talking about this shit. And I'm like, all right, I'm into conspiracies. Yep. I know how this media manipulation works, but I'm on mushrooms right now. And what if this is like some kind of alien virus that's going to like destroy everybody? Like, the come up of hearing about COVID as a whole and coming up on mushrooms all at once, like, I literally have not done a psychedelic since then, because it was just such an intense experience. And the whole time it was happening, like, I was trying to keep my cool as much as possible. So like, my girlfriend didn't know that I was having this like mental freak out in my mind, but it was just like the worst timing ever, that as soon as I started coming up, my dad texts me and says, you have to have a pass to leave the house. And I was like, this is complete bullshit. And then I turn on the TV and it's like COVID. I'm like, what the fuck just happened in the past 20 minutes? Like,
God.
Kind of starting to wrap up towards the end, man. And I'll definitely have to have you come back on for another conversation, because we just had some awesome side tangents and stuff throughout this conversation.
Watch Sin City between now and then, and then we can dive deeper into Sin City.
Yes. Because I'm always happy talking about comic books, man. Like, regardless, even if you don't come on the show anytime soon, when you watch Sin City, I want to hear what you thought about it, but you have to watch the good version.
You pick up the Department of Truth, and then we'll have a two-part, you know, the first half we talk about Sin City, the second half we talk about the Department of Truth.
Works perfect for me, man. But not that this has been like a low show or anything, but kind of just to end stuff on a high note, I always love doing words of wisdom from the guests to the listeners. So whether it's just to the listeners as a whole, other artists out there, if there's any words of wisdom you could bestow on the listeners, what might it be?
I know you even set me up, and I knew I was going to have to do this.
Sometimes it's always better when you just run it off the cuff.
Lately, so I quit my day job back in May, and I'm doing art full time, and that means I'm also being dad full time. And I have been really trying to like be patient, and I realized that being patient with my 3-year-old also like expands to, you know, just like my daily life. I try to be I'm a chill dude for the most part. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I've just been challenging myself to like, not to go with my first like emotional response and reaction to every little thing. Like, everything's cool. Be patient with people. Be kind with people. Like,
I don't think people realize how much patience you actually develop from being with your kids regularly. Because I work technically part-time, because I am the one that has more patience. So I stay home with the kids a couple days a week and stuff, just because we have a issue with trying to find sitters, somebody to help us out with the kids. But it's like, the amount of patience that it has taught me is ridiculous. And how to describe stuff, because I also like lead at my job and stuff like that. And so it's like, having the patience to sit there and break something down for a kid makes it extremely easy to break down a concept on how to do things for adults.
Yeah, right.
And it just, the patience that you develop from having kids, like, brings in so much other aspects of your life. Like, even just being able to have a conversation with like adults and explain something. It's like, after you try to explain something to a kid, explain something to an adult is like, boom, boom, simple.
I just, you know, just be kind. Like, just be patient, be thorough, just be a good person. Like, that's not really a words of wisdom as much as like just common sense, but that's kind of where I've been at the last couple days.
Still words of wisdom though, because people definitely need to be reminded of it, that have patience and just be a good person, man. I mean, it's good words of wisdom, because like I said, people just sometimes need to be reminded of that, you know?
Yeah. You know, Mr. Rogers shit, but these last few days have been really testing me, because I have a 3-year-old that I just couldn't exist with the amount of, not listening, just lots of, I'm apparently just not here. And, you know, so I've done a lot of breathing and, trying to redirect my initial response, which is getting shitty and like clapping my hands together and like, listen to what I'm saying right now, please do this, stop doing this, etc. So be patient, be kind, love people, love one another.
Very good words of wisdom. And
very spinal thought.
And for anybody that hasn't checked out your artwork, which I highly recommend going and checking out, or if anybody wants to get a hold of you on social media, if they've had a similar experience, you know, and you can have hopefully connect some dots for you, where might people be able to find you on the internet?
Yeah, I mostly work on Instagram. That's the most comfortable social media platform right now. So I'm at Easton Hawk Illustration, and I'm also on Reddit quite a bit. So my username is u/diaperfeast. Which is a Tim and Eric reference. Yeah, those are my main two. Facebook is Easton Chandler Hawk, my full name, but I'm not there as much as I used to be.
Yeah, I feel like everybody kind of migrated away from Facebook. Seems like most of the community is all on Instagram now.
It's just cozy.
Yeah, it's easier. There's less stuff getting banned on there, and it's also less spam bots and random people adding you and whatever.
Yeah, the format just is more straightforward, it feels like.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, I will include all of those links down in the show description so everybody can find it quick and easy. And I appreciate you making the time to come on the show, man. It's nice being able to catch up because we've kind of had some passing through conversations and stuff at events, but haven't had a chance to actually sit down and talk. So it was definitely nice, man.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on and for rescheduling this a dozen times. And, yeah, thanks so much.
We'll definitely do it again at some point, man.
Yeah, we have to.
If anyone would like to get in touch with me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can email me at inquiriesofallrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or you guys can get a hold of me through social media, Instagram or Facebook, or you guys can also get a hold of me through the submission forms, which are available on the Linktree, one of which is to contact me, and the other one is to report those encounters. So while you're at it, don't forget to report those encounters to either that or through the email at ommencounterreports@outlook.com. Every single thing that I mentioned throughout the show is all available in the Linktree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation. I hope it connected some dots for you in your own reality. And I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.